All right, good morning. Still morning, 11:20 a.m. September 1st. Happy 1st of September, Chem 12B. And we've been doing review. We've been reviewing the alkene chapter. And let me do a screen share here real quick. We'll pick up where we left off. We'll take a look at what we were doing last time. And so here was our August 30th notes. We were doing this says review for the exam because that was, this was taken from a page that I had that I was doing review for an exam where I was looking at alkenes, and we had all of the alkene chemistry here. And I had all the different reactions. And, you know, we had MCPBA to make epoxides, HOBR, hypobromous acid or hypochlorous acid to do halohalogens. We could look at adding water to make alcohols or adding other nucleophiles. We can make anti-Markovnikov alcohols, all of these different reactions. And yet, as we've talked about these reactions, and particularly as we've gone through the reaction mechanisms for many of these, I've had a sense that that you guys really are not as strong with these reactions as I would like. And I have some definite concerns moving forward in terms of going into the alkene chemistry, the alkyne chemistry, and even into synthesis, that if these reactions aren't strong and these mechanisms in particular aren't strong, then we're really going to have some struggles. We're really going to have some difficulty. And so what I want to do is I really want to kind of back up even a little bit more within this chapter and not just review. I want to dig deeper into this chapter and solidify some of these skills. And then I want to pick it up once we have an understanding of kind of where it is that we're going with this. And then move forward with that. Okay, so and I think that some of these things that we can move fairly quick through, it's really going to come down to the questions and what questions you guys are asking as we're going through these. Okay, so let's give it a shot and let's see how this works. You know, I was giving you sort of more advanced type problems as we were going through and reviewing, and we were looking at the different ideas and concepts. And I think that each time I've hit one of these exam more advanced types of problems, that's where I start running into trouble or start running into concerns. So let's take this. Let's start with alkenes. And let's look at just a simple alkene reaction. That with alkenes, when we look at an alkene, the main thing that we see with the alkene is, let me do it this way, is that pi bond. And that pi bond sits out here and has a definite shape to it, where when we look at it as an orbital, the orbital and the electron density is above and below the plane. And so what we see is that if we look at it within WebMO and we look at the orbitals themselves, we see that the orbital is a double lobed orbital. It's constructed out of the PZ, so these are the unhybridized PZ orbitals. Those orbitals combine to form the pi bond. And that pi bond is above and below the plane. And that above and below is really making these electrons, so it's the electron density, and these electrons are accessible as nucleophile. And so that double bond really does get to act as a nucleophile. And that means that the general reaction that we're looking at is we're generally looking at this guy in all of its different substitution patterns, reacting with some sort of electrophile that has either a full positive or partial positive, and that pi bond that is here, those electrons that constitute that double bond, and I guess maybe I don't want to quite do it that way, what they do is they reach out, they break from one side or the other, and they reach out and they grab this guy. And in so doing that, what results is a change in hybridization. So we go from sp2 to sp3 in that addition in terms of the carbon that is bonding. And the other thing that happens is the remaining carbon stays as a carbocation and stays sp2. And it is all about the stability of this carbocation that governs substitution pattern. And understanding the stability of that carbocation is what we need to do in order to understand everything else that happens with these chemical reactions. And so this is just the general reaction. And these reactions, because we're dealing with an electrophile, these are all general electrophilic addition, where the electrophile is adding to the double bond. And so that's the foundation, the basis of all of the reactions that we're going to look at. And we start fairly simple by looking at the addition of water with a strong acid. And so we can take an alkene and we can react it with water and H2SO4 and a strong acid. And what winds up happening is first a protonation step, and we can use just the proton by itself. In looking at that proton, what we find is that there are two different possible substitution patterns. The proton can add at the terminal end with a secondary carbocation, or the proton can add in the middle with a primary carbocation. And what we find is that there are differences in energy for the carbocations, right? That the tertiary carbocation or the secondary carbocation is more stable, and the primary is less stable. These reactions, when it adds, go through an energy diagram where we can look at these carbocation intermediates, that if we're starting out here with the alkene, that this one would be the secondary carbocation. This one would be the primary carbocation. And the activation energy for the formation, activation energy for the primary. And then out here, I would have to draw the other activation energy, but the activation energy for the secondary would be higher. And so the path that we go through is the lower energy path, where we go this way. And then a next step is where the water molecule comes in here, binds to that carbocation, we get another intermediate with a positive charge, and then finally some base in solution pulls the proton, and we end up with the resulting alcohol. And the energy diagram wise, when we added in that water, where do I want to go here? I want to go to this spot. And then finally to here. So that we have sort of like the overall energy diagram and the pathway through which we follow to get that product. And what's important is the stability of the secondary over the primary. So how can we rationalize how much more stable the secondary is than the primary? If we take two different substrates and compare them and look at rates and speeds, we can look at the rate of hydration with H2SO4, where we're producing a tertiary alcohol, and the same sort of reaction where we create a secondary alcohol. And this would have gone through an intermediate that was a tertiary carbocation. This one would have gone through an intermediate that was a secondary carbocation. And what we find is that this is 10,000 times faster.
Can we explain that using Hammond's postulate?
Hammond postulate is exactly how we would explain that. So that is, Brian, absolutely how we explain it. It really is down to Hammond postulate. Hang on a second, I didn't have the chat open. Oh, that's what you were sending me in the chat. Thank you, Brian. We absolutely explain that with Hammond postulate. I mean, when we look at these two, if we say that this is reaction A and this is reaction B, and we're going to compare those reactions, and we look at A over here, and we find that we start off with this tertiary substrate and we're going to some intermediate here, and that this intermediate, as we come up to it, oops, sorry. Now I can't reverse that. There we go. And this becomes the intermediate after the protonation. So the proton is here and the tertiary carbocation, that this activation energy here, this E sub A, is related to the stability of the carbocation. This carbocation has three electron donating groups on it, 1, 2, and 3. Those three electron donating groups are feeding electron density to the carbocation, stabilizing the carbocation. So these are all electron donating groups. And what they're doing is they're bringing down the energy of that intermediate and therefore bringing down the activation energy for the formation of that intermediate. When I look at the same reaction for B, what I find with B is that when I go through and do the protonation and I end up with that secondary carbocation, so the proton ends up here, the carbocation ends up there, my activation here for the secondary is way higher. And the reason is that by Hammond postulate, when I look at the stability of the secondary carbocation, that the secondary carbocation only has two electron donating groups on it. So these guys here are donating this way, but it only has two electron donating groups. And so what happens is this one is less stable. It's kicked up. And by Hammond postulate, that raises the activation energy for its formation.
So as the
go ahead. No, go for it, Brian.
So as the reactant goes up, the activation energy goes up, and as the reactant light goes down, the activation energy goes down. And so it'd be the same as the product light too in the end, as the not the intermediate, but the late transition state.
Yeah, let's change the language a little bit and say that what we're finding here is that these reactions are endothermic in their first step, right? And so the fact that they're endothermic.
Oh, that would make them product-like then.
In first step, that's right.
Product, okay.
That's why I was getting away from the reactant. Exactly.
Yeah, sorry.
No, you're on it. You're doing great. And so because they're endothermic, that I'm going up in energy, that the transition state resembles the side to which it is closer in energy to. And this would be the first product. Now, it's not the overall product, it's the intermediate, but it's more product-like. So the transition state here is product-like. And that is really important because it sets up how we can compare these and how we can figure out which reaction is going to run faster. As soon as we understand which one has the smaller E sub A, basically what we're saying is this is more stable. Because the product is more stable, what that does is that more stability lowers the activation energy for its formation, and that in turn makes this reaction faster. So much so that it is 10,000 times faster, which is huge in terms of rate. And so this is great that understanding where the chemical reactivity is coming from in why one reaction may be faster than another. And that allows us then to gauge not only competitions within sites, but also to gauge rearrangements, because we know that carbocations are tertiaries are going to be way more stable than secondaries, which are going to be way more stable than primaries. And that sets up this sort of mechanistic approach of being able to protonate a double bond and then look and see how that double bond is going to change and react and go towards the more stable intermediate. And so these are all exactly the ideas that we want to explore. And these reactions can be done in a number of different ways. When we're looking at these different acids and looking at hydrations are generally done with an acid and water. So we usually do water and acid. And the acid that we choose here is usually H2SO4, H3PO4, sometimes nitric, HNO3. These are our sort of go-to acids rather than HCl or HBr. And the reason is that once these protonate, what I end up with is a non-nucleophilic conjugate. So I end up with something that is highly resonance stabilized. Actually, I got one too many double bonds there. And so these highly resonance stabilized these are all non-nucleophilic, which means that they are not competing with water. As a nucleophile. So what that means is that if I take something that has an alkene in it and I treat it with just H2SO4 with very little water in there, what winds up happening is it definitely goes through and this thing can combine with it. But that this is reversible with the carbocation where this comes off very easily.
Is that an oxonium ion that you produce in the middle? Or I can't remember if oxonium just has a positive charge on that oxygen, right?
Yeah, so oxonium ions
We're not producing that there, are we?
There's a couple of different types. Usually oxonium is where we have a positive charge on the oxygen. And similar to a carbonyl is an oxonium ion. So that this is actually an adduct. And this is the carbocation. And then when we put water inside of this, what happens is the water outcompetes. It's a stronger nucleophile, and it goes forward.
Okay, so you'd only produce an oxonium ion if you were adding H3O plus, not H2SO4.
Ah, okay, I see what you're saying. Here's what's going to happen, Brian. Hold on to that. We create the carbocation. We create the more stable carbocation. So we watch that when we add the proton that we're watching for the more stable carbocation. The water molecule comes in. Once the water molecule comes in and binds to the carbocation, this is your oxonium ion. So now you've created an oxonium ion where the oxygen has the positive charge. And that's the oxonium. And then some base in solution takes the proton.
And produces alcohol.
And produces the alcohol. You've got it. Okay, so that's the role of the acid and the role that the acid plays in that. Along with that, what we find is that other types of reactions, halogenations, so we can look at halogenation for a minute. That halogenation works much the same way. If I take an alkene and I react it with HX, regardless of what the X is, where X equals a halogen, that the reaction happens essentially the same. It just changes my nucleophile. I add in the proton. The proton adds in to give me the more stable carbocation. And then the halogen, let's say X, so halogen equals chloride, bromide, iodide, not generally fluoride. I mean, fluoride is a halogen, but we don't typically do these reactions with fluoride. We typically do them with chloride, iodide, or bromide. And then the halogen comes in and binds to this. And in binding to it, we get the alkyl halide. And so the reaction mechanism is essentially the same. One of the unique factors, though, when we take a look at this, is that we can take an alkene and we can add HCl to it, and we can ask, what are the products that we expect to get out of this? And if we go through that mechanism, we would grab the proton. In grabbing the proton, we can consider the two different possible carbocations that we can create. We can add the proton here and create the primary, or we can add the proton to the primary position and get the secondary. And then what we find is the chloride comes in and binds to those two positions, and we would get the two products that would come out of that. And that these would be the two expected products. One of them we would expect to be major from the secondary carbocation. The primary carbocation we would assume to be minor. But when we analyze the product ratio, we find that there's another product yet. And that product here has the chloride, and this one is actually major. And that one has nothing to do with the carbocation. It seems that the chloride is in a completely different location. So the question is, well, how did that happen and why did that happen? And mechanistically, what we find is that when we have a secondary carbocation like this, that there is some stability that comes from what we call hyperconjugation. So I think I mentioned this the other day. That in hyperconjugation, the stability of a carbocation, when I look at the p orbital and I look at an adjacent carbon, and these can be carbon bonds or hydrogen bonds, it really doesn't matter. But the density that here, that is in the sigma bond, and this is the empty p orbital, that there is electron donation here from one to the other. This one is electron poor. It has no electron density in it and is the source of the carbocation. This one is electron rich and has two electrons in it. And what I get is I get electron donation. From sigma bond to empty p orbital. And that this is a form of induction. Where electron density is stabilizing that positive charge. That hyperconjugation, when we go through that sort of hyperconjugation model, what we find is that the proton can actually migrate, can actually bond to that and migrate. And so what we see is that when we have a situation where the proton is here and it is donating some electron density to that positive charge, that what can happen is the proton can actually find its way partially bonded to each side. And I can spread that partial positive between the two different centers. And that partial positive between the two different centers, as it's moving, the hydrogen is taking its electrons with it. And we look to see which one of these is more stable, this side being secondary, this side being tertiary. And what's going to happen is the side that can hold the charge better, that can inductively stabilize it better, is going to take on the larger partial positive. And what literally happens is the hydride transfers and shifts to create the more stable carbocation. So this is more stable. And this is what is called a 1-2 hydride shift. So-called hydride because it's transferring with its electrons. And that's a hydride. Okay, so energetically, if we take this whole sort of concept and look at this concept, what we're seeing is that energetically, what we're doing is we're doing this. We're trading a secondary carbocation for a tertiary carbocation. And we're going through an intermediate, a transition state, where the hydrogen is sort of split between the two, with partial minus and partial positive on each position. And that this is a transition state, and that we're going to something that is more energetically stable, more favorable. Okay. And it's important to realize that it's 1-2, that we're always looking at 1-2 hydride shifts. We're not looking at 1-3 or 1-4 or 1-5, that these types of things, while they can happen, they're not generally the type of thing that happens. They are very special circumstances. They generally happen when there is an arrangement of the molecule that allows for a proton to be in close proximity to a positive charge, and the overlap has to be just right. And it just, and usually these are restricted sort of bicyclic molecules that put one proton in close proximity to a carbocation, and they're always there. And then they can make those shifts, but they're not something to look for. So we're always looking at just 1-2 hydride shifts. And the other important thing about this is only one shift occurs. We're not looking at multiple shifts, no multiple shifts. So that's also important. So why not? Why doesn't it have multiple shifts? Why can't the proton just rearrange and rearrange and rearrange until it gets to its most stable configuration? Why can't I just get the most stable carbocation that I can possibly get? And the answer to that is because there's not enough time, that these things, as the carbocation is created, there is generally enough time through hyperconjugation for a proton to shift, which happens on the femtosecond or attosecond timescale. It's on the timescale of a molecular vibration. And that molecular vibration allows that thing to transfer once. And then enough time has passed that usually there are other molecular collisions such that the water molecule or the halogen that's coming in and binding to that carbocation does so quick enough to quench it. And there's only enough time for that one rearrangement. Now, there are some really, really cool things that they'll wind up doing. For instance, they will take carbocations and they will take molecules that that have configurations like this with a double bond, and they'll take and they'll do magic acid. Magic acid, as funny as it sounds, or super acid. These are acids that that have names because they're crazy strong acids. And then they'll let this go for 3 days or something like that. And it will completely rearrange. And it will have lots and lots of carbocation rearrangements because there's no nucleophile. And now we get many, many rearrangements.
Is sodium amide one of those reactions that it would be like a super acid that could undergo multiple elimination reactions? If you're looking at like alkyl anions, when we're looking at triple bonds,
sodium amides are actually bases rather than super acids. So that's where
it's the liquid ammonium.
Yeah. And so, so those are bases, but, magic acid, super acid, these are acids that look like sulfuric acid, but then have crazy amounts of resonance and electron withdrawing ability so that there might be nitro groups out here. I don't know. I have to go back and look at what these things are, but strong electron withdrawing groups and lots of resonance that make the acid just a super strong acid. And then by not having any water or nucleophile, it just allows the carbocation to live for days and to constantly rearrange. And this is how they do carbocation studies. This is how we learn about hydride shifts and alkyl shifts, and what makes things more stable is by looking at these many, many, many shifts and where the molecule ultimately goes and tracking how it shifts and how it transforms. So we get many different rearrangements. But these are special studies. They are not single reactions like what we're doing up here. So again, I want to reinforce one shift only. Once it shifts once, it's done. And that shift must go downhill. That shift must occur to a more stable configuration. It will never go the opposite. It will never go to a more energetic molecule. So we are only shifting if the carbocation can become more stable, not less stable. All right? Everybody on board with me here? And so the other thing that we see is that if we have a molecule where we do the same sort of halogenation and we go through and we pick up the proton and we look at the different possible cations that can be formed. Again, we're sort of in the situation where we can pick up the proton in this position, get the positive charge there, or we can pick up the proton in the terminal position, get the positive charge there. So this is a primary. This is a secondary. We would expect that we would collect then the products that would be the chloride in the secondary position, the chloride in the primary position. And what happens here is the same sort of concept where the sigma bond that is here is stabilizing the empty p orbital. And in stabilizing it, even though this is a methyl group, that methyl group can transfer. And so we see that methyl group transfer to create a tertiary carbocation. And this is what's called a 1-2 alkyl shift. Now, oftentimes they call it a 1-2 methyl shift. But methyl is a little bit limiting because it implies that only a methyl may shift. In reality, methyls shift faster because they're smaller. And so the smaller a group is, the more likely the group is to shift, or the greater the possibility the group is to shift. But alkyl groups in general, ethyls, propyls, tertiary butyls, can shift as well as methyls. And so it is that any alkyl group can really shift as long as the overlap is correct. And it's all about alignment of the overlap. And so once that shifts, now we can get the additional product where the chloride comes in. And this becomes the major product.
When you say like larger things can shift, but it takes longer, is it reasonable to think about it like mechanistically, like this is heavy and it kind of stays where it is and there's a flexible joint here where it can kind of like pivot back and forth, or is that not the right way to think about it?
I think about it more in terms of, in Chem 1B, you may have talked about, rates in Chem 1B. And within the rates, when you looked at the rate laws for certain reactions, you may have talked about hang on a second, I'm looking for a particular word and I'm trying to find it. It's not an isomer, but it is a deuterium tritium isotope effects. That's what I'm looking for. You may have discussed isotope effects, where when you look at a proton transferring, and then you look at a deuterium transferring or a tritium transferring, that because deuterium weighs twice as much as hydrogen, that the rate law of the hydrogen transferring is twice as fast as deuterium can transfer. And that when you change the size of the molecule, there is the, not momentum, but the essentially it is mass to consider.
Inertia,
exactly. And it's the inertia of it that the those things at rest tend to stay at rest, and those in motion tend to stay in motion. And so things at rest tend to stay at rest. The larger the group is, the harder it is, the more energy it takes to get the group to move, right? And so when we go from a methyl to an ethyl is almost twice as large as a methyl. So it does take nearly twice as long for an ethyl to migrate as it does for a methyl. So usually we're looking at methyl shifts, but that's not to say that other groups can't shift. So we do see alkyl shifts where it can be an ethyl group or it can be another larger group when when there's not a methyl that can conveniently shift. If there's another group that can shift, it will shift. And so alkyl shifts are what I like to say, because it leaves open the door to that possibility that alkyl groups can shift as opposed to methyls. But methyls are faster. So we'll give you that. All right. So what we need to do is we need to watch anytime there's a carbocation. This is a key thing. Anytime a carbocation is formed, one, two hydride, and one, two alkyl shifts are possible. And so we need to be aware of that, and we need to watch for that when doing these types of problems. It becomes part of what we look for. And so if we take an example, let's take something like this, and let's react it with HCl. And how many products can come out of this? Now, this is where you need to start drawing. So this is where you need to write it down, do the protonation, find the initial most stable carbocation, and then look and see what other shifts are possible.
You have three products.
Maybe, Brian.
You have a primary, you have the carbocation at the primary, secondary, and then you also have a tertiary, but you would have a hydride or a methyl shift where then that carbocation would be at the top of that, the top of the molecule there.
Brian, you're essentially right. You got good eyes and good memory. Let's let people draw for a minute, and then I'll pick it up and I'll start drawing it. Try to draw out the products. See what you come up with. I think that one of the things that's really going to benefit you guys in particular is having a less passive instruction and a more active instruction, so that I try to get you guys drawing as much as possible and trying to get you to work through the problem rather than just watching the problem evolve. I think that's going to be one of the really helpful things. It's going to slow us down a little bit, but in terms of online learning, I think it's key.
Also, if anyone wants to do a study group too, I would love to do that if you guys are into it. I'm not sure how everyone feels about the safety of COVID. We can be outside. Maybe you can organize that after class.
Yes, yes, please. Thank you.
Okay. And Brian, did you get in on the Discord?
I signed up in the class pretty a week late, so I'd love to join in and get to know everyone and kind of study with people if everyone's into it. I'm going to be at a coffee shop every day studying, so.
So we'll get you linked into that Discord too. We'll get you an invitation. I think I can invite you.
Okay.
Josiah is throwing it into the chat there too, that they're down for that. Oh, and Reto just threw in a Discord invitation there for you. All right, you guys ready to have me pick up on this a little bit? Okay, so absolutely, what we want to do is we want to go through and we want to grab that proton. And we want to look at the different types of carbocations that we can create. And so when considering those products, you know, with a alkene, there's always an initial two options. And so both options, for now, you should explore both options, right? And then you've got something here, which is tertiary. And this one, which is primary. And once we're at tertiary, the thing here is we could look at a shift, an alkyl shift. And if I do look at that alkyl shift, what it does is it takes me essentially to another tertiary, to the same product. There's no difference here. And so it looks like from this one, it looks like what I can create is I can create the chloride binding here and the chloride binding out at the primary position there. And that the major would be predicted to be going through the tertiary carbocation. So this one is more stable. And it looked like we should be able to get a shift there. It looked like we should be able to consider a hydride shift or the alkyl shift. But in reality, when we shift from tertiary to tertiary, it doesn't generally do that. If we're looking at tertiary to tertiary, this type of shift, because there's no energy change, no net gain, I should say. Because there's no net gain, this one doesn't shift. What we really need to do is we really need to see something like primary to tertiary or primary to secondary. We really want to see that gain of going down in energy in some way in order to see that shift, either that hydride shift or that alkyl shift. So we always want it coming down in energy. You're never going to trade like for like. So that was, and I hadn't really thought that through. Brian was stating accurately the different things that can happen. The reason that I always say to draw it out is because even me looking at this, I didn't quite see that I was trading tertiary for tertiary as soon as I did it. And it's not until I draw it out that I actually see it, which is why I encourage all of you to work by drawing it out. Even at my level, even at having done this for 20 some odd years now, sometimes, particularly when I'm teaching and I'm trying to talk at the same time, I don't always see it just by looking at it. And you got to draw it out in order to see what really happens. Okay, let me try and create, I don't have one here, but I want to try and create one that is a little bit different. Try it again now. Take two. See what you can do with it. See how many products you can come up with. I'm gonna let you guys keep thinking, but I'm gonna talk a little bit while you're thinking. I always have a hard time with dead air, particularly when I feel like I'm on Zoom and there's dead air. I feel like I'm doing something wrong, but I think I'm actually doing something right. I think by having you guys write things down and work through the problems and giving you the space and time to think, I think that's far more important than just listening to me jammer.
So we are going to have a hydride shift here, right? When we remove that double bond.
Well, that's a good question.
Because that's what I'm coming up with, but I'm not 100% positive because that box is throwing off. I feel like it wants to open, but that's a total different reaction that we're going to use later probably.
It is. So let's do this. Let's add the proton and then let's look at what we create. So the two possibilities that we create. We'll throw the box in here. We'll throw the proton onto this side and the primary.
Yeah, that's where I had it first. And then from there, I did that hydride shift. So that would move that.
Let's go. Yep.
Yeah.
Let's go there first. So this is the primary. This is the secondary. And then there is a way to be able to get a tertiary. And so this one, what can happen is we can look at the alkyl shift. And when we look at an alkyl shift, here's what we're doing. And this is what I wanted to get at here, is that when we consider an alkyl shift, if we look at the carbocation, and this becomes the carbocation here, then any bond which is off of this guy, these three bonds are possible bonds to shift. So this carbon is the beta carbon, and this bond is the beta bond. And you should consider all beta bonds.
So this should change the ring rather than move the single carbon.
Well, that's a possibility. So when I say consider all beta bonds, what we need to do is we need to look at all the possible beta bonds. And it would not only be on one side of the carbocation, we should also consider all sides of the carbocation, right? Now, the other sides of the carbocation have hydrogens on them. And so that would be trading from the secondary to a primary carbocation. So I don't want to go backwards. I don't want to go higher in energy. But these three beta bonds are things that I can consider. So I can consider one, I can consider this one, and I can consider this one. That kind of bled them into each other. That didn't work out so well. Maybe I move it this way. And the reason that I have highlighted those two in green and the other one in just red is because the two that are in green are equivalent to each other. And so there's really only one migration there that I need to consider. And so what we'll do is let's take a look at the red migration and see what the red migration brings for us. If I migrate the methyl group, then what I create in migrating the methyl group is the four-membered ring system. The methyl now comes here. I'll just write methyl on there to make it a little bit clearer to be able to see. And the carbocation now sits at a tertiary position. That is more stable. And that is good. Okay, the other thing is, and this is harder to draw, now I need to consider sort of this green shift of what am I looking at in this green shift. Here, what's happening is I'm actually getting a structural change. So what I'm going to do is use a third color yet to go through and number the molecule 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. I am going to break the bond between 4 and 3, and I am going to reconnect 4 to 2. So what I do, and numbering is one of the key things, I'm going to reconnect carbon number 4 and carbon number 2. There's my new connection. And as I connect those, this is going to be 3 is connected to 2. Oh, I'm all messed up. All right, let me try it one more time. I got to pick the right place to be able to do this. Let's say that this position with the methyl here, let's call this methyl number 3, number 7. And then I am now connected to 2, and 4 is now connected to 2, and 5 and 6. And then 1 is also connected to 2. So here's carbon number 1. As I've rearranged it. Now off of carbon number 1 was the hydrogen. And because I broke the bond between 4 and 3 and reconnected 4 to 2, that means that I'm taking electrons away from carbon number 3. Taking electrons away from number 3 creates number 3 as the carbocation. And that is a tertiary carbocation. Now this is a 4-membered ring. This is a 5-membered ring. And the bond angles go from 90 degree bond angles to 109.5. And that's a lot of decrease in ring strain. So not only does it go to a tertiary, but it's a tertiary with decrease of ring strain.
There's no chance that 7 becomes, there's no mechanism to get 7 to be part of the ring, right?
When we look at 7, no, there's no mechanism to be able to get 7 to be part of the ring. Let me show you, though, another way to draw this to think about it. The other way to think about this is to do it this way. To say that I'm breaking this bond and I'm transferring these over here. If I go back and I renumber this system and keep the numbering system the same, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7, you can see that I can sort of do a transitionary structure where I can keep everything aligned, just deleting the bond between 3 and 4. And then I can straighten it out later. And that also allows me to more easily see where the carbocation switches to, that it switches to number 3. Right? And then from there, I can straighten it out to figure out what I'm doing. And so I use this as a tool quite frequently to make the visualization easier. Use a dotted line between where you're migrating and break the bond so that you understand where you've taken the electrons from. And that can be a very powerful tool to get the right thing, to be able to see it a little bit easier. Numbering and dashed lines in order to figure out where things are going. Okay. All right. So we've spent a lot of time now looking at these hydride shifts and alkyl shifts. And I think that you guys can find these. Oh, we didn't actually finish this problem out though. So products. Let me finish the problem. That with HCl, we expect the two that are unshifted. So we expect the chloride there. We expect, I don't know why I'm having so much trouble drawing all of a sudden. Good enough. We expect the chloride out of the terminal. We expect the methyl shift and the chloride in that position. And the last one that we did was the chloride coming into this position. And this one, we expect to be major. And so products, as we look through these products, let me do it this way. This would be product number one. That was the chloride appearing in that place. Product number two, that is that guy. Product number three, coming from that carbocation. And product number four, finally, coming from the ring shift. And then filling in of that carbocation. Okay. Does everybody see kind of where all those products came from and where the major product came from being most stable? Hopefully that helps to track it a little bit. Okay, so then the next sort of thing that I could give you that is an important sort of, an important part of this I got to change this. That's not going to work. There we go. Do it with an oxygen and HCl. Okay, what happens here? And this is what I do to you guys all the time. This is what I am best known for. This is what to be aware of. These are the types of problems that I absolutely love. What I also absolutely love is at least the three of you that I can see are working your tails off drawing. And that's exactly what I want. That's how you're going to get through this.
Hey Jason, is this going to close up on itself from the lone pairs on the oxygen when we have the carbocation over at the tertiary position?
Brian, that's not a bad idea, and that probably would happen to some degree, but with the oxygen making three bonds and carrying the positive charge, the oxygen would be reversibly binding. And so it would like put a pin in it and hold it and help to stabilize it. Mm-hmm. But it's also going to let go of it so the chloride comes in, because there's no way to relieve the positive charge on the oxygen. It's not like an alcohol. If it were an alcohol and you could take the proton away and it could bind permanently, the answer would be yes.
Could we push a proton? Could we push one of the electrons from the oxygen down to the carbocation? Are we going to be moving electrons?
In a way, we're going to see. Yes, you've got some ideas. You're playing with some things. Those are all good questions. Let's do the first part together. We take that proton. We come out with our options, right? There's always two options. And then we have to consider our options. So the first one is that the proton can go to this location. There's my carbocation and my oxygen. And the other one is that the proton can go here and my positive charge is there. Now, this proton was the acidic proton. And there are other protons that are on this molecule. And so these are sort of the existing protons that are on the molecule that I might need to be concerned with in some way. And so I'm going to color those in a different coloring scheme. So there was the acidic proton that added. Okay. So now the question is, well, what can happen? And some of what Brian was mentioning was the fact that this oxygen has lone pairs and the idea that the oxygen could loop in and bind and make a ring system. And particularly when you get 1, 2, 3, 4, four is okay. 5 is way better. 6 is better. So 5 and 6 are what we typically look for. But if that oxygen were to bind, then the oxygen binding would create a positive charge. And this is a methyl that is on it. And there's no way to relieve that positive charge. So there's no proton to be able to pull. The oxygen can't do all of that. And so it just lets go again. This is just going to come back off and break. And so that's not a factor there. So what we've got is we've got a secondary. And we've got a tertiary, but given that there's been no hydride shifts or anything, this seems like a sort of limited problem and a question of why are we working on this problem when this problem seems a little limited, right? So what we're thinking is, it looks like I can get the product where I get the halogen chloride in this position and I should be able to get the chloride in that position. And because this is tertiary, that's going there. This one is secondary. That one's going there. And this one is more stable. By Hammond postulate, a lower activation energy. And so this one should be major.
So you could kind of do a hydride shift with a secondary product, but it's already rare when you start out with. So it's probably not going to be a major thing at the end.
Okay, so that's a good question. When you say secondary, are you talking about transferring this hydrogen?
No, the other one. This one. So then it's stabilized by the oxygen by induction, right?
Okay, so you've used a word there. Let me go ahead and move this. Let me move this proton by hydride shift. And you said by induction. So if I move that hydrogen, then the carbocation falls there. The red proton that initially added exists here. And I have now transferred one of the hydrogens that was one of the green ones, I've transferred it over. And you said that the oxygen can donate by induction. I would counter that when I have lone pairs directly adjacent to a carbocation, that I don't have induction. I have resonance. And that this now is a secondary resonance stabilized carbocation. And and a secondary with resonance is more stable than a tertiary. That resonance is a more important factor. Resonance always trumps induction. That the hierarchy that we have is we have electronegativity, hybridization, then resonance, then size, then induction. And that these are the more important factors, more stabilizing. In terms of factors. And they are stabilizing by sort of 20 pKa units was a way that we had to do this, 15 to 10 pKa units. This one is size is usually on the order of like 3 to 5 pKa units. And induction is usually like 1 to 3. In terms of their, and the pKa scale is a log scale. So this is not a linear scale. This is a logarithmic scale. So when you're talking 20 pKa units, you're talking over 15, 20 over 15 is 10 to the fifth greater. In terms of its stabilizing ability, right? And so what we find is that resonance versus induction, look at the difference between resonance and induction. I mean, it's almost 10 pKa units difference. That's a tremendous difference. Okay, and so what we find then is that this is the most stable carbocation.
Hey, Jason.
Yeah.
If we're looking at pKa values too, and we have like a low pKa, like closer to 1, can we tell which hydrogen is going to be the most acidic hydrogen based on that
pKa? Okay, like, so you're reading, careful there. You're reading into the pKa units and trying to link that with acidity, where yeah. The way that I'm using pKa units, when I put these pKa units on these factors, we originally, or at least in my class, I'm not exactly sure if Zaruba does it this way, but in my class, when I explore stability, we start it in the acid-base chapter. And we start looking at this, the fundamental factors that govern stability. And those fundamental factors can be looked at in terms of acidity and the conjugate bases that are formed after an acid gives up a proton. And so we look at the pKa acidity. For instance, when I say electronegativity hybridization, what I'm looking at is a carbon acid versus a nitrogen acid versus an oxygen acid versus something like a halogen acid. And the pKa on these guys runs 60, 40, 16, and 3. And you're looking at the stability of a C minus, the stability of an N minus, the stability of an O minus and an F minus. And what we're finding is that electronegativity is a better stabilizer of charge than resonance stability of a charge. So I could go through and I could show you on resonance, I could talk about the pKa's that have to do with an acid versus an alcohol, where the pKa on an acid is 4.5 and an alcohol is 16, right? And what there you're looking at is the difference between something which is a resonance stabilized negative on an oxygen that can go back and forth between the two oxygens versus something that just has a static negative charge on it. And so resonance is giving you sort of this 10 pKa stability bump, right? In terms of the stability of the anion, whereas electronegativity and hybridization is giving you this sort of 20 pKa unit shift in each one of these. And I'm using pKa as an argument because I can show, hey, this is how much this effect, I can put a number on it. I could say, this is qualitatively, quantitatively, how much this effect does, right? But now we're taking that and we're shifting it and we're looking at carbocations. So now we're not looking at carbanions, now we're looking at carbocations. But the stability of the effect, when the effect comes into play, can still be harkened back to this hard number, right? And I can look at it and I can say, hey, these are sort of numbers that I can say that are logarithmic numbers, that this type of effect, when I see it, is way more stable than this other effect. I can say that electronegativity is way more stabilizing than resonance, and resonance is way, way more stabilizing than induction. And so when I see resonance, boom, I don't need to take it back to acid base. I just need to know resonance trumps induction. And if I can get a resonance effect, then I go for that resonance effect. And I say, that's going to be my most stable thing. And it harkens back all the way to Hammond postulate, because something that is more stable has a lower activation energy for its formation and is going to form faster. And that's where we go with that. All right. And so is this thing going to be major, right? Right here that I had this question mark, is this going to be major? And the answer is no, it's not. Because what's going to happen is this one, where the chloride is going to come in and is going to bind to this carbocation, pushing the electrons back to the oxygen. And this is what is going to be your major guy right here. This is going to be my oxygen with my chloride alpha to it. And that is going to be major. And the reason is resonance.
But in the very first step, the tertiary product is more likely to form.
Maybe not. Because
lower activation energy, Hammond's principle, all that, right? So you go to the right one, the tertiary.
You would think so, but within these carbocations that are being formed like this, yes, the tertiary is of lower activation energy in the initial formation, but all of these reactions are also reversible. And in their reversibility, it's sort of kinetic versus thermodynamic. Now, if we do it cold enough and we do this reaction at low enough temperature and we do it fast enough, yeah, we could probably trap that tertiary carbocation as being the major product. But most of these reactions we're doing at a slightly higher temperature and for a slightly longer time. And we all sort of have this kinetic versus thermodynamic effect with all of these reactions. And definitely the thermodynamic product is the one that is resonance stabilized, that is going to have the lower energy. It's going to be the one that's going to trap this product. And so these are the things to try to watch for and to try to understand stability-wise where it's going to go. And so the key there to look at is this. When you see a molecule that has an element that has lone pairs, you should watch for resonance. You should always be key to watching for resonance and exploring for resonance. Okay. And Reto, I would acknowledge that, yes, you are correct to a large extent, but by narrowly focusing in on that and losing the resonance, you're going to lose way more problems. You're going to miss way more things that are going to come into play later on with other reactions and things that we're going to look at, and that this is a more important factor that I'd like you to focus on, and that it's going to lead to more success and better understanding down the road.
So if you shake it even a minor, if you shake it long enough, eventually it'll settle into the lowest energy state no matter what.
Yeah. Yep, yep. Okay. Today was a good day. I'm feeling like we're making progress. And I think this was a good discussion. And I like having it be a little bit more active. I like what I'm seeing in you guys participating and engaging in it. And kudos. I'm super stoked. Okay? All right. Go back and work some of those alkene problems. Dig out OChem as a second language and start busting out the alkene problems in OChem as a second language. Or grab the textbook and start working those problems in the alkene chapter. And keep working on this. Okay.
Question about the textbook, Professor. The wiry one, like I have a loose leaf copy and it doesn't have, it's got basically like an online resource for the homework problems or whatever it is.
Okay.
And I can't get it to give me information from the website because the book isn't registered through the school or through you, the instructor or whatever. So I don't have any place to do homework problems and check for the answers or anything.
Is that Klein?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, Travis. Also, I have the textbook and the solutions, the answer key book that comes with it. So if you want to link up and study or you want pictures, I got your text. I can send you the problems and then also the answer key, the answers from the second textbook that I have that has the answers for the problems of the back end chapters.
That's a great resource there. And Travis, also, let me see what I can do to track down a digital copy. There have been years previous where students have found resources online, found copies of that textbook. Let me see if I can track those down.
Okay,
sweet. I might be able to get you some digital resources there as well.
Right on, thank you.
I'll see what
Does anyone have a good chapter number?
A chapter number for the Alkenes?
I think it's chapter 10 or 11. And then,
Depends on the volume. It used to be chapter 9, but I think it's changed in the newer edition of the textbook. So I'm not sure what chapter it is, and I don't have the textbook with me.
Well, 10 it is.
All kinds is chapter 10. So Alkenes is chapter 9.
That's what I think.
It's chapter 9. That's what it is. I don't have it with me right now. It's in my truck, but I'll get on the Discord app and be active on it too.
Okay. Sounds like we got a good game plan. All right.
Let's
call it quits for today. Hey, remember, I've got office hours from 1:30 to 2:30. So if anybody wants to jump in, I'll be online at that time. All right. Take care, you guys.
Thank you, Jason.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Brian, did you get into the class okay? Did you add?
Yeah, I added it. I guess they extended the so I was talking to Linnea and she said she thought they extended the ability to enlist in classes because a lot of classes are pretty minimally filled up.
Yeah.
So I jumped on and allowed me to do it and it gave me access to Canvas. So yeah, I just missed a week's worth. But what I did is I went on to your actual website knowing that that's where you usually work out of. And I was watching the old videos from the previous semester to try to catch up.
That's perfect.
So that's where I started. But yeah, I'll catch up and then